CliffCentral.com.
Yebo, CliffCentral.com, and we are live this morning. Bulelo, Leanne, and I looking after you on a Monday, trying to get things going, help you start your week off correctly. I see Bitcoin has crossed the $40,000 mark this weekend, which is interesting news. We'll have to check in with Sean Sanders later on this week to find out what he thinks of that. So good news if you are a Bitcoin or an Ethereum investor, or just someone who's speculating on the outside. That's also good. We're going to talk a little bit about the Olympics because this is the week for us to look to some other stars. We had Tatiana Schoonmaker, who did a really good job and made us very proud over the course of last week. But there's some more stuff happening this week, and Bulelo will fill us in on that. And we're going to look at, some people are still talking about the Springboks. That's worth discussing. It always puts South Africans in a good mood. We're going to look at...
All bad.
Jacob Zuma's daughters who are angry with Naomi Campbell. Now, this is hilarious. I mean...
Jacob Zuma, our dad, Jacob Zuma. Jacob Zuma.
That's like a clown show, the Jacob Zuma daughters. Who ever thought we would ever need to take those morons seriously? And if you do, good for you. You've got to explain to the rest of us how. I mean, you know, it's like turning on the hot water tap, and then when it's cold, you go... Oh, but I thought it would be hot. It seems like a fairly stupid place to start the conversation. Leanne, just tell us about these Zuma daughters and how they're angry with Naomi Campbell. I mean, really, this is a battle I don't care who wins. Naomi Campbell is equally vacuous and inconsequential, if you ask me. But the Zuma daughters are a whole new breed of stupid. So let's take a look at the fight that the two of them are having and see if we can summon up enough fucks to give. Let's go.
So Naomi Campbell, or as Damon would call her, Naomi.
Naomi Campbell.
She wrote an open letter to Jacob Zuma, and she implored him to act responsibly and appear before the State Capture Commission.
Mm.
She also posted photographs recently of the aftermath of the riots,
mm-hmm.
And also this lengthy caption addressed to Zuma.
Mm.
And the daughters, well, Duduzile in particular, or Jabu Zuma, as she's also known as, she proceeded to write this strongly worded response to Campbell as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She said, "Campbell, you don't really know about the true South Africa." She also laid out the decades of struggle undertaken by Zuma during the apartheid era.
She said,
you know, in case you weren't aware, he's also one of those South Africans that fought for the liberation of this country, spent 10 years in Robben Island, 15 in exile. If you've actually been watching President Zuma over the past few years, as you claim, you'd be well aware of the fact that all he has ever called for was a fair trial. He's been more than willing to stand in front of a court and prove his innocence.
Or in this case, get sentenced by the same court for contempt thereof. So, I mean, tell me who you believe. But I love this. I mean, Naomi Campbell, who knew she was such a right winger? Because that's how people will describe you if you're like, you thought that the whole situation in KZN was unacceptable. Oh, you must be a right winger. You anti-Jacob Zuma, you must be a right winger. You must be someone who doesn't understand the struggle. And then for Duduzile Zuma to bring up like all that old shit, as if we haven't heard that tired old song played a billion times. It doesn't carry very much water anymore. It really doesn't. Does anyone care?
No, I particularly don't, but I'm quite a delighted observer. She says, "Keep your unsolicited opinions to yourself where you lack knowledge. This is bigger than you and I. Let's leave it to the adults." I wouldn't call him an adult, but anyway.
Oh, my God.
Any further comments on this? I mean, it is funny. It is hilarious. Anybody want to add anything to that? And Bulelo, you look like you're frothing at the mouth.
I want to know who the people are who went, right, this morning, woman called Naomi Campbell, her thoughts on international geopolitics, everybody. Mm-hmm. Let's see what her thoughts are on a, you know, on a deeply convoluted African issue as she steps out of her...
This is what makes politics like kind of like mental health, is everybody thinks they have purchasing power in that world. Everybody thinks that their opinion matters. You bring up politics, and really, it is everyone's subject, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree.
So
politics is everywhere, so all around.
There's no such thing as an expert in politics. There really isn't. And you can see that just by picking up any newspaper in the country today or reading the editorial column of any newspaper in the country. Sometimes they get someone who's not even in politics to write something. Sometimes I write something. Sometimes you say something about politics is an equal... there's a very low barrier to entry for people to talk about politics. And I think the same is going on with mental health at the moment. It's like everybody thinks because they have some inkling of a little bit of anxiety. You know, they wake up in the morning and they're like, oof, it's Monday. I don't know if I can handle this. I must be a mental health expert. Similarly, oh, Jacob Zuma, that's a subject I can wax lyrical about. I don't need to be qualified to talk about this. Seems a hell of a lot simpler than talking about vaccinations. I think I'll offer an opinion, even though I'm a model.
Yeah, it's
the daughter of a politician. Oh, that gives me qualification. I'll talk about that.
You've cracked open something which I'm not sure if I brought this up before. Like Michelle Obama, I heard too much from you. Bill Clinton, I'm hearing too much from you. It's like, why do we always need to hear about the politician's family and hear from them and have them write a book? Like, hey, Bill Clinton, you did your thing. Shut the hell up. I want to hear from Hillary. What are her policies? Like now, Zuma family, all of you shut the hell up. Jacob Zuma was the former president.
Hey,
I don't care about looting responsibly.
I hate to point it out to you, but you've already solved this problem for us this morning. You solved it for us earlier when you said that we have like a chief mentality. And what happens is that when you have that chief mentality, then just by virtue of being married to or descended from said chief, you are important. It's a retrograde way of looking at the world. It's crazy. I mean, you know, to her credit, you didn't hear Melania Trump talking about politics ever, right? And she was a model, and she was the first lady, and she could have used her platform, as everybody keeps telling me it's important to have a platform. She could have used her platform to have been, I don't know, hugely political. Instead, she said just about nothing political, and no one paid her any attention, which is correct for a first lady. First lady is just married to the president. It's just like, you know, Kamala Harris's husband is just married to her. We don't want to know what he thinks about anything. We don't care.
No. And we shouldn't, quite frankly, unless he's the CEO of Goldman Sachs.
And even then, let's hear from him on Goldman Sachs issues. Let's not hear from him stuff, you know. The problem is, like, so many subjects these days are generalist subjects, and that's good because it gives us something to talk about at Bry's when the Springboks win. We need that, you know, because people like me don't want to talk about rugby the whole time. So you've got to figure out where exactly it is that you have something to contribute, and maybe you have something really, really left field to say that everyone's going to be very upset by, or something that people are going to agree with generally. I mean, this is what makes conversation interesting. But Naomi Campbell and Dudu Zile, I mean, I don't really care who wins. Do you care, Leanne? I mean, are you on either of their sides?
The thing is, what help is it going to do? Does Naomi think that she can make a difference? Hmm. Does she think that Jacob Zuma is going to listen to her?
But yes.
Does she think that the Zulus are going to listen to her?
Yes. Do you know why? Because everywhere she goes, people keep telling Naomi Campbell how important she is. She's never been told by anybody, you're just very pretty.
And again, this is where I think lockdown and COVID restrictions served such a great purpose, is that it knocked Hollywood and celebrities and people who were just mm-hmm. famous for being famous right into shape.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've gone down a notch. And I think she's probably trying to... She's not used to being ignored mm-hmm. or not noticed.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
It's almost attention-seeking behavior.
So then let me ask you this, because I see lots of these public service announcements, you know, these kind of ads for masking or these ads for vaccinations or something about lockdowns in general, and they'll require or they'll they'll pay for the services of some Hollywood actor. In fact, let me not use the vaccine or lockdowns as the topic, because we're all sick of that. Let me use the Cleveland Indians, okay? Now, the Cleveland Indians have changed their names to the Cleveland Guardians, because calling yourself Indian is terribly politically incorrect. You know about this, Mbulela. I can see you nodding. So what they did is they got Tom Hanks, an actor, to voice a thing about how brave and proud they are of their new name. And they've chosen the name the Cleveland Guardians, right, instead of the Cleveland Indians. And Tom Hanks is busy doing this whole thing of, you know, if you're really brave and you believe in things and you stood up for yourself, which is, by the way, precisely the opposite of what you've done if you've changed your name, because a couple of people on Twitter thought it was, like, that is not the definition of bravery. In fact, bravery would be to say to a couple of people on Twitter, sorry, our name has been the Cleveland Indians for a longer time than you've been alive. We're going to keep calling ourselves the Cleveland Indians. That's what brave people do. Instead, they get Tom Hanks to do this voiceover for them. Probably paid him a couple of million dollars. Who knows? And does it change anybody's mind? You just said celebrities and actors and Hollywood A-listers and people who we used to think were very important and we needed their opinion on things. Until we started hearing how dumb their opinions were on things, we started to realize, actually, we'd prefer if you just acted or looked pretty on a ramp, or did a makeup course on Instagram or whatever. You know, do those things that you're good at and leave the rest to the people who might have something valuable to contribute. Do you really think there's anyone who could change your mind just by virtue of who they are? And the same goes for arguments for authority, from authority. You know, like if someone has 3 doctorates in something, does that necessarily mean you need to take them more seriously? If they have 3 really great movies in their IMDb bibliography, does that make them worth listening to more than someone else? You tell me.
In this case, no, because I've always said this, is that I am not interested in political correctness, because it's political correctness. Let me use one somebody all of us will understand in South Africa. So I've never understood when people are speaking why people have to say the N-word or the K-word, but I've thought about it, and here's what I've come to, is that political correctness is only interested in dealing with semantics and never the root cause, as Dr. Hanan was saying just now, is it's the art of semantics.
Yeah.
So you never really get to talk about the issue. Like now, it's like, what's really interesting actually is, hey, why the hell, how did we get to a point where a team could be named as the Cleveland Indians? But nobody's ever going to talk about that. Mm-mm. Because we've now got Tom Hanks. Let's kind of just smooth it over, because actually the real root of it is probably really shameful, but we're not going to get to that. We are the Guardians, and you are proud, and I'm Tom Hanks, and mm-hmm. Wilson!
And we're just going to believe everything that Tom Hanks says, because he's a great movie actor. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And he screamed Wilson at a volleyball.
Yeah. I mean, is there anyone who could change your mind on a significant issue just by being themselves and saying it?
Yeah, no, only somebody who has. I think only someone for me who I do place scientists in high regard.
Okay.
That is somebody who I'll put right up there, along with experience.
Okay.
People who have experience, those I'll put up there, and they would be able to sway me.
And you, Mbulelo, you said yes, you do think there is someone.
Yeah, no, for me, I mean, I can't be a hypocrite. I do change my my behavior all the time in my personal life because of neuroscience. That's a lot of my consumption, whether podcast or reading, you know. I always try and operate at an optimal level. They do change my mind, you know. And I sort of pride myself on trying to acquire high-quality information, asking people that I admire mm-hmm. and I know are actually credible. And I do like to change when evidence changes, so... So I don't want to be a hypocrite there. I certainly do have people who I do trust blindly in this case.
I mean, all over, I'm just seeing a general degradation of credibility. And what I mean by that is that, you know, there are people who might have, like, listened to Bill Gates a while ago, and they might have taken everything Bill Gates said terribly seriously. And now those same people are like, nah, I wouldn't listen to that guy. Or Elon Musk, you know, they're like, well, you know, since he said his thing about Bitcoin, it's just to me like there isn't a central, there isn't like a default credibility check that we can do on each other anymore. There used to be something like that. I think people used to generally respect either qualifications or experience, as Leanne says, but I think that's all gone out of the window. And these days, it's very hard to find two people who will agree that someone is smart enough to be able to expound some wisdom on something, and we'll all just take them seriously. It's amazingly hard to find two people who will agree on that. And it never used to be, really, or am I being stupid? Because I'm happy to be accused of being stupid here. I know when I was a kid, if adults told you something, especially if it was your parents, you kind of believed them. And I almost wonder if humans aren't now, with all the information that we have available to us and the misinformation we have available to us,
yeah,
whether we aren't coming into a crisis of understanding, where we aren't coming into a new era in humanity where it doesn't matter how clever or stupid you are, everybody's opinion counts. And I wonder if that's doing us any good or if it's doing us damage.
What we really should do is wait for the full moon and allow only Aquarius people to tell us what to do.
Oh, yeah, but I hear what you're saying, Gareth. It's like we're almost self-harming by being too knowledgeable.
Or too skeptical. Like we think we're knowledgeable. Like we think we know a whole – I'm guilty of this a lot of the time. You think you know everything, or you think you know everything about something. And then you discover new information and you're a little bit shameful for a little while because you're, oh, shit, I didn't know that. I must have sounded so dumb to people who knew more than me. And then there are, you know, there are those people who just, they're self-aware enough to be able to say, oof, hold on, I'm not going to say anything about this. I don't know. I appreciate the latter group of people more than I do myself when I'm full of it. I mean, we have to talk about stuff every day on the show. If we only spoke about things that we understood completely, which no human will ever be able to claim in any subject, then we wouldn't have anything to talk about. We wouldn't be able to do this show. And I mean, we talked about mental health and politics as being two areas where, you know, there's a bit of leeway. I wonder how many people have this crisis of confidence on a daily basis where they go, I don't know if I'm really in a position to talk about this. And whether we can
which
correct.
Is where, yeah, which is where, I mean, our sciences, both hard and so and sort of social sciences, are useful. And psychology in this has a framework for us. It's called the Dunning-Kruger effect, and it's becoming more and more exposed now, just how few. Because what tends to happen in this effect, quickly, is that people that are super competent actually always underplay their confidence. It's part of the Dunning-Kruger effect, is people that are uber at the final level, they always mark themselves far less than what they are. And it's quite the opposite for morons like me, who just mouth off, is you overestimate. Yeah, so the Dunning-Kruger effect is something for people who are interested in kind of the, I think you put it well, the crisis of sort of overload of information. Dunning-Kruger effect, a really useful tool to humble yourself.
Well, Jim says, have you noticed how many life coaches there are these days? I have no idea where where do these people get their credentials from?
They are everywhere.
Derek says, these days you actually don't need an argument or justification for why you do or say something. You just use your emotions to justify it. That's also a big part of it. Absolutely. Lenise says, the Springboks made our hearts very happy this weekend. What's going to happen with Rusty and about the video he made? What's this all about, Bulelo? And then we can just get a quick catch-up from you about the Olympics. Go on.
Classic Rusty. You know, in sport, you have to sometimes, as a leader, take the pressure off your players and your dressing room. So Rusty just had a full go. Classic diversion. Talk about me, not how badly the Springboks played in the first test. And it worked a charm. And the Springboks absolutely smashed the Poms this weekend. So it's 1-1 in the series. Okay. Massive turnaround. We gave them a proper clapping this weekend. It was flipping lacquer to see.
You start talking like we're at a braai as soon as I bring up the Springboks. Yeah, isn't that amazing?
No, you got to. Yes, it's Mark Gotti. Like it's Gotti Navy.
All right, who do we need? Who do we need to be watching at the Olympics this week?
This week, Gerda Steyn is the one. She's the golden girl right now of road running. So we got the marathon, which will close the Olympics out Sunday. So she's the one to watch. And then, of course, our guy, Wade van Niekerk in the 400. That's coming up this week. I think he's on in the semifinals today and the final 2 days' time. So, yeah, we got some stars coming up there. And we'll talk to a former Olympian sometime this week, probably the best 1,500-meter runner South Africa has ever produced, Johan Kroonier. We'll have him on. And we'll talk about the box tomorrow with former Springbok Flip van der Merwe.
Don't just tune in to Cliff Central Sport for the new look and feel of the show, but also for the excellent guests that they have. So make sure you join in for that. That's cool.
And for those douchebags who like Formula One, you ever been around Formula One people in your life? Just like... if you're not into Formula One, like, are you not into it? It's not for everyone. Oh, clearly. Yeah. Anyway, we got Spike Ballantyne on today, so join us at around 12 o'clock, 12:30. He'll be on.
Shani says life experience today is more relevant today. Some of the most stupid people I know are medical doctors. That's entirely true in certain subjects, and you know, nobody's expert in everything. Nobody. So just because you're a doctor of philosophy doesn't mean you can operate on my heart. And just because you're a medical doctor doesn't mean that we can talk philosophy.
Well said. Smart idiots, I call them.
Yeah, smart idiots. Tyler says, the MKT show has become really good as of late. It was good before, now it's world class. I highly recommend it. So how much did you pay Tyler? How much did you pay Tyler for that comment, Mbulelo?
Well, here's the thing that Tyler's just done there is that's a compliment and an insult at the same time there. I love that. It's you ever gone to someone, hey, you look really good today. Like, you know, I look like trash 2 days ago. So, thank you. And I'm hurt at the same time, Tyler. Thank you.
All right. So we got some Olympics to watch. So does it all finish on Sunday? Is it then it's done?
Yeah.
Like it just started.
It's 2 weeks.
Dude.
Yeah. Yeah, it's over.
It's quick, man. It's different. I was thinking it was along the lines of World Cup soccer timing, where you have like a whole month. It's much shorter.
Oh, no.
All right. So then
more events. Many more events.
So then it's done. Over. Are there any other areas that we've done really well? Have we scored any silvers? Scored any bronzes anywhere? Just swimming?
Simbani let us down. Okay. Let himself down. He came fourth.
Oh, no. He should have said he had mental health issues and quit.
He did the classic thanks for the support thing, but you lost. You didn't win. So although he is a great athlete, but he lost. So sport is about winning and losing. Sorry.
Of course. No, nobody cares.
So we're not going
to
talk.
Someone said to me a while ago, like, if you get silver at the Olympics, then you're the best loser. Imagine if they put that on the medals. Oh my God.
Mental health issues aside, I just don't know if I could take the pressure of performing like that. Eh? No, wow.
No way. I mean, like, I've been trying really hard just to be disciplined enough to do a little bit of exercise every day. And I've so far got it right. But I know that on a bad day, I'll find some excuse and I won't do it. And you imagine if you're training as an athlete at the Olympics, you're like at the top of the game. You are physically in the most extraordinary form. You are mentally, you bring your big match temperament. You're emotionally on the knife's edge because this is all or nothing for you. This is what you could go down in history for, or it's something that will be forgotten almost the day after you've taken part. It's got to be extremely stressful. It's got to be. And I love that. That's why we watch. If it wasn't consequential, we wouldn't watch. We'd go, ugh, it's just one of those heats again.
Having said that, both of you have been at the apex of what we do for a living for 20 years. So an Olympian,
we're discussing
what you two do.
Discussing the different farts. I mean, that's what that's all we're doing. Making a huge contribution here. Trust me. Our contribution is minimal. So someone once said to me, I thought this was really cool. They're like, what do you really think your purpose in life is? What, you know, and I was probably in my fourth or fifth year of doing radio. And I was like, I don't really know. Maybe just to laugh, make people laugh in the traffic.
That's good enough for me.
So
it's good enough.
I've said it before.
Right.
To tell my, I wrote it down once. My purpose is to tell stories that make people feel good about themselves.
Good.
And
that's awesome.
It's okay to be average.
Yeah. And
no,
you know what?
That's so cool.
If you've discovered that about yourself and you can say it like you just did, I mean, that's enviable. That's not bad. That's just terrific. You know, some people do want to go to the moon. Some people want to go to Mars. Some people have huge, outlandish, incredible goals. Other people are much more humble about their goals. And guess who's got a better chance of scoring? The humble. The humble one. Someone says,
the three of us have brilliant relationships.
If I'm at a dinner table and there are 10 people around the table and everybody's saying what they really want to achieve in their lives, which would, by the way, be one of the worst dinners imaginable. But if we did play that game at a dinner and one of them said, oh, well, I aspire to rescue humanity and to take us boldly into the universe. And someone else said, I'd like to wake up tomorrow and pat my dog. I think I'd be more drawn to the person who says, I'd like to wake up tomorrow and pat my dog. Because the person who says they're going to save humanity is sometimes biting off more than they can chew. And you could just tell immediately that that's some bullshit, that they're trying to get some enormous social and what would you call it, hierarchical points on everyone else on. I love it when someone who's done nothing with their life says they're a philanthropist.
Oh, do me a favor.
I love it when someone who's done zero in their life calls themselves an activist. I love that. That's just then you know straight away what you're dealing with, right? You just know. The minute you meet someone and you're like, hi, I'm Gareth. I make people laugh in traffic. And they go, hi, I'm Denise, and I'm a social entrepreneur who is busy in activism against vaccines. You're like, oh, okay. Need to get away from this person immediately. Please, please, please.
Abort.
I don't want to be sitting next to them at dinner tonight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Philanthropist is the biggest douchebag term. Like, all you're saying is, hi, I'm a nice person. No, you don't get points for being a nice person. Like, when my mom made a meal, right? Okay, she cooked. Yes, that is something you list. I cooked. I don't get to say, oh, I ate it. You don't get credit for the, I ate it. My mom cooked and I ate it. No. Yeah. We're not doing that.
So here's some comments on the Olympics. Fulstrace says, Paralympics are following. Maybe that's why Gareth expected the Olympics to last longer. I don't really watch the Paralympics, I'll be honest with you. I heard the funniest thing, says Hermin. This is great. We should have a special, special Olympics where random people get chosen to do the events and they have to do it. Then we'll all watch. So Leanne Moll's number could come up and she could be chosen for the South African team to take part in the 100-meter sprints. And you never know. You might be chosen against other.
Can you imagine me doing pole vaulting or long jump or something like that?
I would love that. We should definitely push for this. We're just, it's like a lottery. You get chosen.
Oh, we love it. But, it's like like when they had auditions for Top Billing. Everyone watched that. It was good entertainment.
So great. So great. Here's my life advice being summarized by Carl. Aim lower. Yeah, that's it. Very, very good. All right. And by the way, while we're talking about the MKT show, the Cliff Central Sports Show, you need to be aware, as Ntokozo's pointing out here, that the time slot has changed. They're actually moving the show a little bit earlier. It's now at 11:30, right?
Well, sorry, that's just for today because we have some technical. So we are moving today. The show is 11 till 1 today and not from 12 till 2 as normal. So 11 until 1. Like, share, subscribe. Bye, my lovies. Mwah. Well, yeah. That
is that what you do? That's your thing, huh? Do it properly, like a proper YouTuber.
Okay. Hi, guys. I just wanted to say, obviously, every sponsor I talk about, that's obviously money for me, so you guys will get nothing, but that's fine. You must just like, share, subscribe. And you guys are the most important, even though I get all of the money. This is the GCS. Remember to like, share, subscribe. Yeah. Everything's important that you do here. And right. After this, we don't actually care about you until tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock. Bye, my lovies.
Son of a bitch.
Oh, sorry.
I think you just ruined it. There was someone who really believed that this was our everything.
Oh, sorry. I sorry.
Okay. Now it's time for us to move on to something much more interesting than the contents of our own heads. We're going to talk about the contents of other people's collections. This is where we talk to people all over the country and doing all kinds of interesting things and collecting amazing stuff. It is Collectomania, which is brought to you by the South African Gold Coin Exchange and the Scoin Shop. We have met amazing people, and we've learnt about their incredible collections. Some of them are on the border of being insane and being obsessed, and I count myself.
Yeah, pretty much.
I count myself in that category. And my brother had the cheek to say the other day something like, "Oh, I don't understand these people who are totally obsessed with things." And I said to him, "You were actually on Collectomania because you're obsessed with your collections. Yeah. I've been on the show from the get-go because I love this more than anything else in the week, where we get to explore these people's collections. And today is no different. Today we're going to join Amelia McPherson, who sent us an email about her collection. So Amelia said this, and then I'll introduce you to her. She said, "Hey, Gareth, I thought I'd show you my rosary collection for Collectomania. It's still growing, but each rosary is unique because I've collected it from different religious sites all over the world. I buy a rosary after visiting a holy site. I've bought rosaries in Jordan, Israel, Palestine, Turkey, Rome, Spain, India, and my most special one from the Car Guard in Johannesburg. Each rosary is unique in terms of what it commemorates. Those that come from Rome are usually about the reign of the current Pope, and those from Jerusalem have a piece of the Holy Land or are branded with the location as to where they come from. The rosary from India is interesting, and we'll find out about that in a second. So let's introduce you to Amelia. Hey, Amelia, nice to see you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good morning. Goedemorgen from Amsterdam this morning.
You look amazingly fresh and bright and full of morning joy this morning. It could be because your temperature in Amsterdam is significantly better than ours here in South Africa, right?
Yeah, most definitely. It's a wonderful morning. It'll probably rain in about 15 minutes, but I'm going to take what I have at the moment.
So tell us, first of all, you're in Amsterdam. You've been listening to the show for a while. And what brings you to Amsterdam? What do you do there?
Yeah, I mean, I've been listening to the show since you guys were on 5FM.
Thank you.
I'm actually so starstruck by Leanne at the moment.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't know what to say. I'm starstruck.
There she is.
I remember your telenovela on 5FM back in the day, and it would brighten my morning. So when you say that tell stories to make people happy, I'm definitely one of those people, Leanne.
Are you talking about that terrible show, Days of Our Mornings?
Yes, that's it. It was fantastic.
It's the worst soap opera in history. All right, so what are you doing in Amsterdam?
Yeah, so my husband and I are both working here. We relocated during the lockdown actually last year, so it was a pretty interesting move.
Sure.
But there's a massive South African community out here in Amsterdam. I mean, there's parts of it that are Johannesburg and Cape Town.
Wow.
Little Johannesburg and little Cape Town. So. It's an awesome place. It's not South Africa, of course. You know, it's not Johannesburg or Cape Town for that matter. But it's an interesting place and very well located for travel, which is something that I enjoy doing.
Well, first of all, you must be really brave to have relocated during lockdown. That couldn't have been easy. And the fact that you've managed to settle in there is to your credit. Now let's talk about your collection, because this is always interesting. So a rosary collection, I'm going to assume you're Catholic, because otherwise rosaries wouldn't really be in your universe.
Yeah, I'm not Catholic. I am.
See? This is amazing.
So it's just interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I do have a Christian faith and I do follow my faith, but I'm not Catholic.
Okay.
I think it's the beauty of the rosary, which is the thing that I find most attractive. The sort of Christian iconography, which is just so detailed on a little piece of silver, you know, at the end of the cross, which I find very interesting. But also part of a greater picture, which is generally Christian iconography from the early part of the formation of the Christian church.
Wow.
And so it's to me, it's a very intersectional item, very multi-layered as well. And one of those layers is it's something we love doing, which is traveling, history, which is another massive interest of mine. And my faith, you know, so it's where the three
I
meet.
I think that's so special. You don't have to be Orthodox to carry the Orthodox symbols of a particular faith. And I mean, rosaries The reason I assumed you were Catholic is because a lot of Catholic people have a rosary for the purposes of saying the rosary, which is almost like this prayer, which they, you know, it's an incantation, it's a prayer, and it could be for help, it could be for forgiveness, it could be for strength, it could be for whatever. And they rub the beads, and they actually say, there's a certain prayer that gets said as the beads are felt between the fingers. And then it usually contains some sort of, almost like a, you know, a relic. It usually contains some kind of relic. It might be something which is not particularly rare, like a little stone from the Holy Land, or a piece of wood from a, you know, an old Catholic saint's icon or whatever it might have been. So in your case, take us through some of these so we can get to understand them. I think it's really interesting to see them at the same time. So here's a collection of them on the wall. Look at that. It's beautiful.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So that's just a snapshot of the ones that I could fit into a picture. Okay. This collection's about 16 or 17 pieces at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So just to take you through them, I picked up my first piece in about 2013, which was in Italy, in Rome. And I think from there, you know, just, you know, another aspect of it is, you know, when you travel, there's just a kitschness of the souvenirs that you pick up when you travel.
Yeah.
And just not wanting to bring back things that are meaningless and cheap and a euro or a dollar or whatever it would be. The rosary started to be something that was very momentous of the particular travel where I was.
Uh-huh.
And so that's the sort of genesis of why I started to buy them as well.
Right.
There's a few pieces from Italy. They all trace religious locations where you can sort of link it back to a biblical story or a something that happened in one of the books of the Bible.
Right.
So the Italian ones really profile St. Paul and St. Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And then the collection, we made a trip to Jerusalem, to Israel, Jerusalem, and Jordan.
Oh, wow.
And those then profile the life of Jesus and a little bit of St. Paul as well, because he's such a massive figure in the Christian faith. So the most special piece, if I can point it out to you, is the pink and blue one, which is the fourth one in the that's the one.
Is that the one?
Perfect, yeah,
beautiful.
That's the one. Yeah, it's that is from Jordan in a place called Bethany, which is there's a massive fight between Israel and Jordan right on the border, and I mean it's a river Jordan that runs through, and it's the river is about a meter. From Jordan side to Israel side, and you look across and there's Israel on the other side of the river. There's a dispute in that particular part of the world about where was the baptism site of Jesus. So the Jordanians believe it was on the Jordanian side of the river, and the Israelis believe it was on the Israeli side of the river. So this piece is from there. The site is very special. Again, somebody prescribes to a faith. When you visit the site, there's definitely something very special about it. This is an awesome piece. The other site which was particularly interesting and special was it was Bethlehem in Palestine.
But just and, before you move on from Bethany, I'm interested in this. I mean, there must be people who go there to be baptized, right?
Yes. Yeah. There's a massive commercialization of these religious sites is also a big problem. So you have these tour groups that are 80 to 100 people at a time baptizing themselves in the Jordan River.
Sure.
And at the wrong time of the year, the Jordan River is very dirty. I hope I don't get taken off for that comment. But it's a bit like, again, like baptizing yourself in the Ganges. It's so many people have been into that river to be baptized. But
forget coronavirus. Yeah, so, the things you could get out of the Jordan River at the wrong time of year would be much worse.
Exactly. So it is massively commercialized.
Right.
The Jordanian side of things, though, because they get less tourism than Israel, it definitely had more of an authentic feel and really made me lean towards that. This is probably the more authentic of the two sites.
Right.
Yeah.
So that cross comes from there and that rosary.
Yeah.
Does it contain anything from the river? Is it just made there? Is it just something they sell there? I mean, have you investigated any of that stuff? Or for you, was it just a memento?
It's more of a memento. However, the stone is a quartz. It's a pink rose quartz that's in that particular particular rosary.
Right.
And again, you know, it's how do I describe it? It's got a little piece, they call it Terra, it's got Terra Jerusalem written on it.
Okay.
It's a little bit piece of the sand that they embed in the, just above the fifth rose,
amazing.
Rosary.
Amazing. All right, so yeah. what's this one here? Is that the same one?
So that's the one, right? So behind that, and you can't see it, is a little piece of, like a little bit of sand, right, that's embedded in a glass.
Oh, right, in this, in that bead yeah. over there. So whose face is yeah. that on that silver piece in the middle there?
It's generally the Pope, so it's the reigning Pope that would have his face in the rosary because of it being a Catholic icon as such.
Yeah, yeah, which one is this? This green?
Right, so this is a lovely piece as well. So this, I was telling you about our trip to Palestine, and when we went to Bethlehem, and again, a wonderful, very moving sight when you get there, but a big portion of it is having to go through the Palestinian territory. So, you know, there's a lot of people that comment about what's going on between Israel and Palestine, and I take no particular side in this, but when you travel between Israel and Palestine, there's definitely something that's not right, you know, and you see it for yourself. And high walls and a lot of imagery that makes you think that you're in a war-torn area. And going through the, you know, you see the suffering of the people that you're driving past in your, right. your air-conditioned cab to take
Tour
you to
bus.
The site, and you see how terrible things are. And then you get to this very well-adorned, beautiful, pay €2 to get in tourist attraction that's very well kept in the middle of Bethlehem, which is in the middle of the Palestinian territory. So, again, very multi-layered in terms of, you know, it's a rosary I collected for you know, a portion of my belief, a portion of my travel.
Sure.
But also just to understand that there's also suffering that's going on in a lot of these places that we visit, yeah.
So this one's also, is that Mary or is it St. Christopher or who is that in the middle there?
So that's Mary, and a lot of the rosaries also got to do with the veneration of Mary and prayers to Mary. So,
right.
You know, she is, there's Christian law as such, which indicates that if you say the rosary and you do it religiously every day, that you'll get a better place in heaven one day. So it's not something I prescribe to personally.
So,
but Leanne
and Bolelo, you and I, Amelia, we're at the back of the queue if we have to say the rosary every day, because I don't think I've ever done that. So I think we're a bit screwed. Now,
yeah.
Do you have the kind of obsession where you have to stop yourself from buying these, or is it something you're quite disciplined about? You buy one in a particular place,
yeah.
you remember it for those reasons, it's important to you and special to you for those reasons, but you're not just collecting rosaries here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah, 100%. So the rules are that I have to buy it at the religious location. So
right.
can't buy it from the vendor next to it who's selling it for €5 cheaper than what I'm paying for it. You have to buy it at the little, you know, in a Catholic church, what you'll usually find is a little annex where they have candles and rosaries and you sort of postcards sometimes.
How did you end up with one from India? Because India is not one of the places that Jesus is meant to have gone to, as far as I can remember.
Yep.
So India, you bought a rosary there and it's particularly special to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's also, you know, we're tracing Christian history, but we're also like looking for saints. So I'm all over the world trying to locate the next saint that I can find.
Sure.
I need to tell you, my next trip is to St. Petersburg because there's stories about the apostle Andrew and his trips to Russia or the land of the man eaters. But we'll get there, right?
So, all right.
India is particularly interesting. Sorry, I'm just getting a bit of feedback.
Oh, no, carry on. Yeah. We can hear you perfectly. Go on.
So India is interesting because St. Thomas, Thomas the Doubter, the known as Doubting Thomas in the Christian Gospels, his last known location was Kerala in the south of India. And there's a number of religious sites that venerate his death in India, in Kerala in particular. And so we visited my husband and I visited the location of his death. Again, the Christian law says that he was shot with a bow and arrow and it pierced his side, and that's how he died. A part of that also is that all your apostles of Jesus' apostles were martyred. So, you know, it fits that particular
right.
narrative as well. And so that, we went to that particular location, and I picked up the rosary at that church in Kerala.
Amazing.
And it's handmade. So it's the first rosary that I believe that's 100% handmade. Again, you know, again, to this aspect of commercialization of travel and mementos, right, and things that you pick up. I don't believe that any of them are made in Jerusalem or made in Jordan or Rome. I think a lot of them are made in China, like most things are made in China.
Yes,
but,
sure.
But, you know, it's the buying it where it's from, yeah, that's special to me.
I love, yeah, that. That's spectacular. Yeah. So yeah, where do you keep all of these? Do you display them on the wall like you just showed us in that one picture, or do you keep them in a box altogether? Or, 'cause, yeah, you don't want them getting all tangled up either.
Absolutely, right. So I'm between homes at the moment, so I've got them in a box.
Okay.
So, but when we move into our home here in the Netherlands, I usually have them on a display. So it's got a little glass box, and they hang quite neatly next to one another.
Beautiful.
But I need to get a new one because the collection is growing quite fast.
I think that's so special. How awesome is this? And especially, yeah, because you're a Christian, so it means something more to you than it would to someone who's just collecting trinkets. You know, some,
yes,
people might collect them for their artistic value. Some people might collect them just to remind themselves of the trips they've been on. But it's almost more special than that for you because there's an element of spiritual kind of connection that happens. I think that's magic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's lovely. So what do you think of this, Leanne? This is pretty much one of the most interesting collections I've seen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just reading the comments and how people didn't know that rosaries, you know, were what they are. So it's really interesting to hear. And also we have a comment from Kamikaze, just beneath that one, which says, and I'm sure not only applies to Gareth, but just watch a documentary on YouTube named Jesus in India, or The Missing Years of India.
Wow. Okay. That sounds,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, so that's something that I'd like to look into.
Urweshi says, this is so interesting. I didn't know that rosaries could be this interesting. Atiswa is saying the same thing. See, there we go. This is very cool. And you've got Zulu stuff on your wall there. You've got like a traditional,
yeah,
Zulu headdress.
It's just, I miss home like a hole in the head. Like, people don't realize, like, even during the week of the protest, you could have put me in the middle of the protest and I would have been very happy.
So, oh my God, that tells you something.
Yeah, no, we really do miss home. We're not coming home soon, but we miss it.
I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is, according to Gen X, this is my favorite collection so far. I think she left out the word far, but that's what she says. You know, I think this is just great. Again, even if you're moving house, even if you're living in a different country and you can't move your entire collection around with you, some of it's in boxes or whatever, it just shows you how important this is. Like, I guarantee you, one of the first things you did when you moved into your house was think about where you're going to put your collection and,
yeah,
how much of it,
yeah,
you could take out. That's how important these things are to those of us who collect.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I just want to also say this collection doesn't have a monetary value at all. Like, I couldn't tell you, like, if you had to ask me how much I've spent on the collection, I would probably say about 4,000 Rand in total. You know, it's not a high value collection, but it is a collection of very high sentimental value.
Amazing.
And it was an interesting question when we had our insurance assessors ask us, what's the most valued thing for you? And I'm like, well, it's this rosary collection. And they were like, well, we can't give it a value. So, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, yeah. Amelia, I'm so pleased you got to share it with us because this is such a great example of what we do on Collectomania. And good luck to you. Keep collecting and enjoy your trip to St. Petersburg. And be sure to let us know how it goes.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for the time, guys. Appreciate it.
Great to have you on.
Thanks, Amelia. Yeah. Good to meet you.
That's
you
so great.
Too.
Love it.
Bye.
No, that's really cool. I you know what? This is my favorite part of the week where we get to explore other people's collections. You know why? Because it makes me feel better about being a lunatic obsessive collector. That's all. It's Schadenfreude. I'm like, well, I'm not the only one. I'm not the only one who's mad who's collecting stuff. There are obviously other people who do this too.
When last have you been in your lab?
Oh, I'm in the lab. I work there every day. So I'm not doing chemical experiments every day, but I did do some interesting stuff last week in the lab. There's some of these chemicals I have to keep checking on, because some of them you need to vent from the bottles. You know, they release gases of various kinds. Some of them that you
just...
Not farts, no. Things like hydrogen peroxide, which, if you know, if you've even, you probably have hydrogen peroxide in your house somewhere. A lot of people use it as a Definitely. As a bleach or a dye or a disinfectant. What it does is it produces oxygen, and light and heat can create the reaction, or it just decomposes naturally, and then it produces oxygen. So if you have it in a sealed bottle, you have to occasionally just open the bottle and release some of the oxygen. Not farts at all, Leanne, but there are farts. I mean, you know, there are things that smell like farts, like hydrogen sulfide, which you don't want too close to you for too long. That's why it smells. It smells to us because it's dangerous.
Okay. So it's it's like seeing something that looks dangerous and you won't eat it.
Correct. So what the smell, we rather than that it smells bad to us, we have learned that smell is bad because it's killed people before. So it's in our, you know, that's why you can smell rotten meat, for example, and you know not to eat it. Or if there's a decomposing body or something like it, that the smell is awful to us because we've learned that it means bad things. Not that we've got the sense of smell and that something is awful and therefore, you know, God made that smell bad so that we wouldn't like it. It's kind of the wrong way around.
I was watching a documentary.
Watching
a documentary over the weekend of a man in Australia who hadn't spoken to his family in like 5 years. He was a hoarder, and he eventually died just of natural causes.
Mm-hmm.
And so the family had to go in and start cleaning out this house. And it took them a year to get through everything.
Wow.
It's like really bad.
Man.
And months into this, that in when they got into one of the rooms, they found a human body wasn't his.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What?
And it was surrounded, had this like throne, not in religious terms, of smelling candles, like aromatic candles.
Oh wow.
So he obviously, so they had to now figure out who this person was, obviously. And he, through the autopsy, they revealed that he'd been shot.
Oh my God.
And they found the rifle in the home, and they obviously knew that the owner had shot him.
Hmm.
And they had to figure out who he was, but he'd actually been like quite mummified, and they couldn't figure out fingerprints. So they used dental records eventually, and he was a vagrant, really. He was a meth addict who hadn't spoken to his own family in 20 years.
Wow.
And had obviously got onto the property looking for money or trying to steal something. And this old man just shot him, shoved him in a room, put like more and more stuff on him, lit some candles and forgot about it.
Wow. That's good.
Crazy old bastard.
No, but I mean, listen, you know, there are these people who like keep a dead body around them. And I just, to me, that's so creepy and grisly. Ugh. Horrible, horrible, horrible stuff.
Yeah. How do you live like that? I don't know.
You live with something dead in the next room. I mean, do you remember when we had that thing that was dead in the roof or in the floor in that little recording pod of ours? And for months, we didn't know what was going on. And I think it's still probably a bit smelly in there. I mean, that was like a bird or a rat or something. We still never found the body, but you could tell there was something dead somewhere. I don't know how people live in a house with a whole human in it. Ugh. Anyway, Lenise says urine is similar to hydrogen sulfide in that the smell of it is something which we immediately pick up on. Obviously, because then we can tell that that's not something that you should be drinking or that you should be around, you know.
Although some people do.
It's why certain things are really smelly to us, is because they're probably really dangerous to us. If you have a penchant for murder, hobos are your best for not getting caught, says Carl. Well, thanks for that advice. I'm going to be sure to put that into play today. And then Derek says, watch the documentary on Catherine Knight, Australia's cannibal killer. Dun, dun, dun.
Ooh.
While we're talking about documentaries, someone said here, and we have to talk about this because I hadn't heard about it yet, but Leanne, did you watch the documentary called Devilsdorp?
Haven't heard of it, but I've written it down.
So apparently it's about Krugersdorp and that satanic cult that woman started in Krugersdorp.
Oh, my word, yes.
But, I mean, this is Krugersdorp, yeah. So take your pick of which satanic cult, you know.
It's quite confusing when you could just say Krugersdorp and you should expect the devil to be there, you know? Like, you don't need to say there's a cult. It's just people in Krugersdorp killed each other.
All right, just be very wary of the Far East and the Far West Rand. That's where all the bad things happen.
My world is this, the northern suburbs of Johannesburg and not the northern suburbs. I'm aware of anything that's outside of that. Correct.
All right, very good. We'll end on that note while people are getting pissed off because they live all over the country and they think that you're full of yourself. It's incredible. All right, very good. Thanks, everybody. It's been a fun Monday. Good way to start the week, and we will see you tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. bright and early. Have an excellent day, and we'll check you out tomorrow. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye. CliffCentral.com.